So when I was first asked to go ahead and put a distinguished panel together, I asked myself, you know, why do we keep meeting on this? You know, we've been spending millions and millions of dollars for many, many years. I've been playing in this for 25 or 30 years. In fact, when I counted up the number of years of our panelists that have been working in global health, it's something like 150 years. You know, and we keep getting together and saying, what should we be doing? And so my initial thought was, why can't we get it right? I mean, there's certainly, it's almost like we heard yesterday at the opening session, $1 trillion in healthcare, why can't we get it right? Same thing with global health. But you know, as we've really dug into the weeds, we actually have gotten some of it right. And we'll hear a little bit more this morning about the challenges that we have and the things indeed that we have gotten right. So I have no financial disclosures to report to you. And I want to go ahead and I apologize for not having this effusive introduction the way I got from Dr. Khan, but I'm going to briefly do the introductions now of our panel and then go ahead and call them up, and we'll hold the questions until the end. And I thank you for starting 5 minutes early. We probably will need every moment. So on my right, a dear friend, Deb Armbruster, who is the Senior Maternal and Newborn Health Advisor for USAID, has been actively involved with the PATH group, has been involved with the POPPY group running that initiative in terms of postpartum hemorrhage. Next to her, my colleague and partner in crime at our site in India, Dr. Shiva Gudar, who's professor and head, Department of Physiology at Nehru Medical College in Belgaum, India. On his right, Dr. Harshad Sanghvi, who's the Vice President and Medical Director of JAPIGO at Johns Hopkins University, long committed to programs in education and research in international health. Next to him, another member of the global network that has funded at the University of Alabama, Dr. Wally Carlo, Professor and Division Director of Neonatology at the University of Alabama in Birmingham, and he does a lot of his work in the Zambia as well as other countries around the world. So we'll be hearing from Wally, and it's no coincidence that Dr. Wright should be our anchor, because indeed she has anchored all of us, or many of us anyway, around the panel in focusing good research on outcomes that make a difference. So she'll be our last speaker before we take the Q&A. And with that, let's sort of begin by I guess the job of the chair is trying to frame the issues. And what is that we really want to do? What we want to do is we want to have a rapid reduction in maternal and child mortality. I think no one would argue with that fact. That's what we need to do. That's where we need to go. And rapid, and why do we say rapid? Because more than 130 countries signed in 1990 to the UN and many other organizational approach to reducing the mortality of children under the age of five, as well as maternal mortality. It started in 1990. It's going to go till 2015. And we woke up one morning and said, my goodness, it's 2011. What have we done? How are we doing? Are we going to really reach these goals? And you all know we set goals that are always tough to reach. But nonetheless, it can be done. So we call this the Millennium Development Goals, 4 and 5 out of the 8 goals that were initially agreed upon by the various organizations. So MDG 4 calls for reducing mortality for children under 5 by 2/3. So I want you to think of this as a home mortgage. If it's a home mortgage and you pay off 4.4% a year, at the end of the 25 years, you will have reached your goal. Easier said than done. And to make it even more complex, MDG 5 goals calls for reducing maternal mortality by a more robust number, by 75% in that 25-year period, which means you got to pay off that balance at 5.5% per year. Again, easier said than done. So how are we doing? Let me begin with the good news story, because there are some good news things to talk about. So at the annual global deaths of children under 5 have decreased nearly 39% from the years 1990 to 2010. That's a massive number. 12.4 million global deaths of children under 5, and when we take a look at this, 93 deaths of children under 5 per 1,000 live births in 1990, And when we take a look at 2010, we've reduced it to 7.6 million global deaths. And that's a horrific number. Horrific number. I mean, it really pales when we think about it. 12 million deaths down to almost 8 million deaths. However, the reduction is very significant, down to 57 deaths of children under 5 per 1,000 live births. And we've done reasonably well with maternal mortality as well. We've dropped at 34% in 1990 to 2008. And these are the best estimates we have. We know they're not exact. From about 545,000 deaths per year to 358,000 deaths per year. An enormous number of women still dying related to childbirth. So the other good news is in 2010, everybody looked around and said, my God, we're making some headway. Let's go ahead and put some money on the table, some more money on the table, and let's get the job done. So there was a pledge of $40 billion from all of the donor nations. I don't know the exact amount that's been allocated, but it's a fraction of that number up to now. And we have to keep track of that. And finally, let me end this slide with sort of a good news story for my colleagues working in India and those of you who've done that. There's been a rapid change. There's been a 29 or almost 29% reduction in maternal mortality in the last 6 years. Undoubtedly, part of this due to economic development, but I think we really need to dig in further and see how this 29% actually occurred. So maybe the not-so-good news, and unfortunately it's more than one slide. So the not-so-good news is only 9 of the 137 countries are likely to meet both goals, MDG Goal 4 and MDG 5 by 2015. And if you look at these countries, what a disparate group of countries. And also recognize there's a lot of war and fighting going on in these countries. They may not reach it, even though these are the estimates. China probably will. Egypt, Iran, Libya, Peru, the Maldives, Mongolia, Syria, Tunisia. Lots of revolution and unrest in these countries. And we'll talk a little bit more about what they did right. And, you know, we've learned over the years that you can't really think about a good outcome for the baby unless you think of a good outcome for the mother. You need to go ahead and preserve good maternal health. And yet when we take a look at the correlation between mortality of women and mortality of infants, that correlation is only 0.42, or 42%. So there's a disconnect here that we really need to understand a little bit better. So additionally, not so good news. Starting with the good stuff. The good stuff is if we look at Latin America and South Asia, North Africa, the Middle East, we've dropped all the under 5 deaths fairly substantially. However, we've shifted the burden to sub-Saharan Africa. So from 33% in 1990 up to 49% in 2011. So the really bad news is 23 sub-Saharan African countries aren't going to reach their goals, not in 2015, but not before 2040. So that's a really bad scenario. If we take a look at deaths among infants up to 1 year, that represents the majority of all of the infant deaths. So as Willie Sutton said, you know, why did you rob a bank? That's where the money is. If you want to have impact, you better go ahead and address neonatal mortality, and you better address mortality of under age 1, because that's 71% of the entire total. Having said that, the reason we haven't done as well is because there are more challenges there. When we take a look at between the age of 1 and 5, there is great disparity. It means that there's an opportunity for making things happen more quickly. If we take a look, for example, of the disparity between countries like Niger and Africa and Greece and Iceland and Italy, not the meccas that we think of great maternal child health, but nonetheless, you know, really good, 173-fold difference. So there's a great opportunity for change as we move forward. So some mixed news. 13 countries are likely to achieve the maternal mortality goals by 2015. And an additional 15 countries are going to achieve this goal by 2020. But 96 countries are going to take more than 20 years after 2015 to reach the target. So obviously, with all of the money pouring in, we're not going to be reaching all of the targets. On the other hand, the good news when we talk about accelerated growth in that first slide, accelerated reduction of mortality, in the last 6 years, maternal deaths declined, as I said, very rapidly in India, but also in Ethiopia, in Pakistan, in Nigeria, in Indonesia, in China. And because things were so bad in Afghanistan, they've declined as well in Afghanistan, thanks to the work of some of the folks around the table. So we've seen a decline of about 73,000 deaths. So what can we learn from wealthy nations? You know, at Christiana, we have a secret shopper that goes around in our operating rooms and on the floors looking at who doesn't wash their hands. It's really true, and it's reported out. And you know, the national data is somewhere around 85% of hand washing. Only 85. We can save lots of lives in the United States if everybody would wash their hands appropriately. We don't do that as well as we might, obviously, globally. We keep learning about this from our scientific base in the United States and in Western countries. We've learned that simple medications, a uterotonic agent, be it misoprostol or oxytocin, magnesium sulfate, saves lives. It's very, very cost effective. We need to get that into where patients are being seen. We need to learn a little bit more about simple resuscitation. You'll hear from Dr. Carlo in his published paper in the New England Journal, the wonderful work that went on with the group here. We've learned that team approaches are very, very important. You can't just handle an emergency yourself. Everybody has to be geared and learn about it. We practice this over and over again. What happens when you get a hemorrhage in our operating room? What happens if a shoulder gets stuck? And we all know what our jobs are and what we need to do. And that is transferable. That information is transferable overseas. And all of these measures that I just mentioned to you are very low-cost measures. Doesn't cost a lot of money. Very, very important. What about those countries who are going to reach their goals, those nine disparate countries that we spoke about? What's unique about them? And this is harder to go ahead and sort of extract, but as I sort of looked at what those countries were doing, political will was really critical. You know, every country before elections talks about women and children's health, but they rarely go ahead and put the resources behind it. But in these countries, they actually did. They have a strong health ministry, and they needed sufficient allocation of resources to do the job. You have to have quality data. If you're looking at changes, you need to begin with a baseline of data that really makes sense. The oxytocin, misoprostol, max sulfate, simple antibiotics, we need to have it in the community level, at the district, at the tertiary hospitals, and now we already have outcome data to show that it does save lives. Additionally, we need to be able to go ahead and transfer patients to a higher level of care. Somebody's in trouble, we need to recognize it. Do we use cell phone technology? Do we use other technologies? Do we have new vehicles to get people to where a C-section can be done and where blood is available? Very, very critical to us. And I don't want to end this discussion and call on our panelists without saying a word about reproductive health issues and issues related to family planning. We could go ahead and save 68,000 maternal lives with good access to family planning services. There's 76 million unintended pregnancies a year, 19 million unsafe abortions. In fact, if we look at all of the maternal mortality that's been reported, 12% of the total mortality is due to septic abortion. So we need to look at that. And at this slide, I won't go into the details, but what it really shows us that if we go ahead and provide good family planning services, it more than pays for itself in the reduction of mortality, let alone life quality, let alone not having children growing up without their mothers. Really, really important stuff. So the last two slides really is focusing on what the panel is going to do for us today. So we're going to hear a little bit about some of our successes in research and moving research into practice. What did we do here? And it's going to be focusing on the leading causes of maternal and neonatal death. We also are going to be talking a little about something unique that we've developed called a registry. I think there are a couple of people who are going to mention it. We now have 195,000 births and captured, and we've captured data on 28-day post-delivery information on the baby and 42-day on the mother with 99% plus follow-up. We don't even have that data, I think, in the United States. So it's a wonderful base. It may be one of the best bases available in international health. I'm going to leave the last bullet for before introducing you and move on to the issue that WHO and all of us actually support having skilled birth providers going ahead and doing deliveries. But we also have to recognize that 56% of deliveries, and we've made progress, but 56% of deliveries are still occurring in the village level or at home births. And so we can't negate those as we move forward toward getting skilled birth attendants. Additionally, you're going to hear a little bit about simulation models. You know, we have a big simulation center at Christiana. It costs millions of dollars. It looks like an 8-bed operating room. We train all of our residents and our students in that, just like pilots get trained before they operate an airplane. But we don't need that simulation model in the field. And you're going to hear about low-cost simulation and how it helps us with infant resuscitation and how it may even help us in postpartum hemorrhage. And finally, our first speaker is going to speak about level one evidence on the impact of the active management of the third stage of labor. This has been around a long time, and yet even in the developed world, it hasn't always been utilized. So you're going to speak, Deb, in just a moment on this subject, which is really critical. If we know what works, why don't we just do it? So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn the podium over to Deb Armbruster. I guess I have one more slide. Public-private partnerships, we keep talking about it. It works. It works. It's critical. We know Dr. Gawande has had best-selling books on checklists. We do need to employ checklists. They seem to work as well. Finally, WHO has supported them. If you look at the September 1 New England Journal of Medicine, there is a wonderful 4-page article on devices. Historically, WHO has always talked about the essentials drug list. We ought to develop an essential device list, low cost, that can help us go ahead and improve our outcomes. We talked a little bit about quality data, but good data doesn't work and is not transferable unless you evaluate it from the process point of view and as well as the outcome point of view. And the hot topic these days in United States hospitals and healthcare is quality. Quality is sort of value over cost, and we're seeing this as the economy starts to shrink. How are we using our monies wisely? What's the cost effectiveness of what we do? And we're seeing more interest in comparative effectiveness research and in implementation research, because even when we know it works, we need to figure out ways to scale it up around the country. So with that, Deb, let me turn it over to you.
Sounds good.